Today's sponsor is Sonos. Sonos is offering the listeners of Mr. Robot 10% off one order of $2,500 or less for any product on Sonos.com. This offer is available for a limited time only and cannot be combined with other discounts or promotions. Use the promo code ROBOT10, that's capital ROBOT10, at Sonos.com to receive this offer.
Every day we change the world. But to change the world in a way that means anything, it's slow, it's methodical.
Welcome to 2-Bit Encryption, the officially unofficial podcast for Mr. Robot on USA. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we are talking about Season 3, Episode 4 today. It's titled Episode 3.3, _ Metadata, Part 2. No, Part 2, not Part 2.
Yeah.
It was very confusing. I looked at the title. I'm like, did I miss Part 1 of this episode?
Yeah.
And then I realized, oh, it's not Part 2. It's Part 2.
I had a similar reaction.
So for people who don't know, Part 2 is a parody archive volume, as it's called, which is basically a file that tells you how many files are supposed to be in an archive, and it allows you to download only the files that you're missing, so you don't have to re-download all the files, in the case that you don't have some of them. That's pretty much it. I don't really know how it relates. I think more the metadata part is going to relate to this episode.
Although I will say that this does feel like an episode where there is a lot of moving pieces.
Yeah, I'm missing Part 1, so
we're missing a lot of the pieces. Like, clearly Darlene's got a plan that she's putting into execution, and we see the hows, but we don't know the whys or the wheres or the whos. We know that Angela has some sort of multifaceted plot going on with Elliot.
Phillip's got some kind of plan.
Phillip's got his head up his ass. I don't think Phillip's got anything going on right now.
No, Phillip. If Phillip doesn't have anything going on, he's an actual idiot.
I think that is
true. White
Rose,
last episode, told him, Angela's in my pocket, and now he's going to do Angela a favor, or at least he promises to. There's no way that Phillip doesn't have that ringing in his mind.
Oh, yeah.
As
he
promises to fire
Elliot. I
guess
if I were Phillip, I would not comply with that request.
This man has not gotten to where he is by being an idiot.
Yeah, I know. but I think that, you know, why do powerful men and women fail? Because they get complacent. Because they get used to the power. They get used to being able to flex and make problems go away. And
that's one reason, yeah.
And they get careless, and I feel like, you're right. Like, I guess if I were Phillip, I would do the opposite of what Angela wants, because that's...
Promote him.
Because he thinks that that's what... Yeah, exactly. Elliot's right. Got to be the CIO, and that's really going to piss off Tyrell. Tyrell's got... I think he's going to try to assassinate Elliot.
Oh, man.
Using the Dark Army, but why would...
Yeah.
Why would Indiana's largest underground? No, why would White Rose go back that plan? Because she seems to think Elliot is the red wheelbarrow in this equation. I mean, this is just there's all this stuff swirling around, and also the Reddit exploded this week with all kinds of crazy theories. Well, I don't even know crazy theories, interesting theories to discuss.
I feel like this week it really, and I don't know if just my attention to it and my interest level in it really skyrocketed, but I thought this episode really brought the season, like you said, put it in full tornado mode, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say,
there's so much shit going on.
I thought you say brought into focus. I'm like,
No.
Yeah.
No, it brought it to like a new height of wow, essentially.
It brought the full shit show status.
No, it's not a shit show.
I mean, okay. I'm just saying
that there are so many balls in the air.
Right.
Where do you look?
Yeah, you know? As a viewer, you really don't know who's on whose side,
yeah,
who's fucking who. Like, they give us some clues. Like, there's the way they structured Irving scenes, where we know half of each puzzle, but we know how Irving played them both, so we kind of know that, like, the half that we aren't sure of is probably a lie. So, I mean, there's some clues there. I don't know how much we want to just talk in the preamble.
Yeah, I thought it was a really great episode. I was engaged start to finish.
Yeah.
And every character seemed to be doing interesting things this episode.
I really like the end. You know, Mr. Robot does a good job usually crushing endings, but like Darlene springing her trap or implementing her get out of whatever strategy and leaving her brother, the photo of the family. And the way they composed that shot where the destination was in focus the whole time as they're playing this Everything Means Nothing to Me.
Yeah.
I thought was really, really, really awesome.
It was. It was cool. Maybe we should start at the beginning.
Yeah. The other thing is just structurally, I was worried, as much as I enjoyed the Tyrell episode last week, that they were going to lose a bit of the momentum from the cliffhanger for the, you know, Elliot getting into Darlene's apartment.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out that wasn't much of a cliffhanger. And I felt like within a minute of the episode, I was right back into that. So, like, they really got away with even the minor setback. There was no setback, in my opinion. So, like...
Yeah, to me, the thing that really made it work is that the audience had a lot of questions that we wanted answered. And that episode served as an answer to a lot of those things, you know?
It's just, I think it was a bold choice because I felt like that's a decision that could have blown up in Esmail's face. And it's something that, like, is so against the conventional wisdom of how to tell a story that it's kind of like, you know, NFL coaches going for it on fourth down. It's like, if you win, you're the hero, but if you lose, everybody's like, well, fuck, of course you win. You turned over on downs, you dumbass. You should have kicked a field goal. So I kind of respect when people take those choices and, you know, they succeed or they fail. And it seemed like it mostly succeeded this week.
Yeah, and it's definitely something I've criticized other shows for, not to name names, but in recent history. But I think there are times when it works and times when it doesn't. And in my opinion, this one worked.
Yeah.
And it didn't cut the legs out from under this episode, certainly.
Indeed. Hey, some housekeeping before we get further into the episode. We just released a podcast on the latest Thor movie, Ragnarok. The free version contains our general ideas of the movie and some discussion of upcoming movies. The spoiler-filled version for the club members has got the spoiler-filled version.
Yeah.
You know we do Mr. Robot. We are also doing The Walking Dead. We're also doing American Horror Story. We just got finished last weekend. We did coverage of all of Stranger Things season 2. All 9 episodes, have a podcast for each. We're collecting feedback to do a wrap up for season 2 next week, which is coming. We also released a quip, the Quit Your Pitching bonus audio for club members. We probably do for a Bald Move TV. I just finished
I think
Deuce.
Next week.
Yeah, it's feeling like there's a Bald Move TV storm a-brewing, and it's about time to do one. I know that there might be a movie in between, but the Justice League is coming out in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
We're definitely going to be seeing that first run. Just tons of stuff. It's all at baldmove.com. Oh, super important. If you are in the Southeast, if you're anywhere near Huntsville, Alabama, we're going to be at the Rocket City NerdCon. Doing a variety of panels. We're going to be dressing up as Roose Bolton and Walder Frey and playing a little an alternative reality game called The Red Wedding, and doing some panels and meeting and greeting fans all weekend long. This weekend, tickets still available, rocketcitynerdcon.org to get the times, the dates, locations. We'll be there. Come out and say hi. Come see us. We'll be doing a live podcast. It's going to be a good time. rocketcitynerdcon.org.
Okay, why don't we get into the recap? We start with Darlene busting a girl who's stolen her wallet. She takes her family photo back, but lets her keep the wallet. All she cares about is that one. And while she's doing it, she's saying, "Oh, you know, I've stolen from you. I've stolen from that old lady over there and that dude over there. And I even killed the lady." And she's feeling real shitty about the 5-9 stuff and her involvement in it.
Yeah, it's funny because I thought the whole time I was watching this, like, Darlene's being menacing. And I'm like, am I buying this? Is Darlene really menacing? And I think she's menacing to a teenager.
Sure, yeah.
Who's trying to pick her pocket.
If that's John Rambo, probably not as menacing.
Right. She's not quite like Jules sitting there with his bad motherfucker waiting for you to pick it up. But she does the job considering the target that she's targeting.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Darlene this episode. I thought the performance was really good, and the character was
she does a lot with not much.
Yeah,
because she just really has like mostly this kind of like blank, tough exterior that like I guess makes it when that does crack in places and makes it even more effective.
Yeah,
but she's just got like this dislike 90% of the scene. She's just got this dead eye stare. I guess Angela's the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, Ellie, I mean, like, most of the non-Tyrell, non-Mr. Robot characters are kind of that way.
Yeah.
They're not demonstrative.
Nope. So we're not quite sure what Darlene is on about here. It seems like maybe she's about to get hard, you know? Like, this is who I am. She flops those sunglasses down on her face.
I wonder, to me, she is setting the stage for her to disappear and, like, I don't know if she's setting up herself to fake her own death, because mm-hmm. that's another theory, that, like, Darlene's going to die in a plane crash, or at least stage her own death, because, you know, she's going to, like if I'll make this case as we go through the episode, but here she's making a very memorable encounter with the lead of the F Society that... if she goes missing and her face is splashed on the news, this young woman will remember that and tell the story of this person behaving erratically, which will feed into the narrative, I think, is what's happening.
Okay.
So that's step one. As I see the others, I'll call it out.
All right. It's certainly, I guess, off script as far as what White Rose wants to try and do here.
Sure.
I think that's interesting that she's...
because she's all about...
not necessarily knowingly... working against White Rose's the spin that White Rose wants to put on this, but definitely is.
Yeah, because you're talking Rose is wanting to pin this all onto the Iranians,
right?
And put up that giant smokescreen.
Yeah, which would not work if Darlene gets outed.
Right.
So we see Elliot's portion of the scene from last week, and a lot of Dom's as well. Essentially, a replay of that final scene, where he finds Dom's base of operations while he's talking about metadata and what that is. Essentially, it's the data that comes with the data you actually want that describes where it was created, how it was created, when it was created. Darlene comes home, and Dom warns her that Elliot is inside. And she goes inside, where Elliot tells her that he knows she hacked him. And she explains that she did it because she didn't trust Mr. Robot. And he says he needs to show her something. Yeah, metadata. That's important, I guess. I'm having a little bit of trouble connecting it to the overall picture here.
I think it's just like showing like how... I mean, there's a lot of ways you could take this. The fact that this show uses a lot of sideband communication to communicate with
sure.
his fans about the show, meta about the meta is not the thing, it's the thing about the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And also that there's just so much stuff going behind the scenes on this episode that is not the plot, but it's
most
like
people don't even know is there.
It's hidden unless you know where to look. Like I mm-hmm. feel like I see where Esmail is going with the title. I'm having a hard time putting it into words.
Sure.
I also enjoyed this scene because I honestly, I try to figure out, like, how do we know when it's Elliot versus Mr. Robot?
Yeah.
And since they are establishing ground rules, like Angela says, I can tell by looking in your eyes and when you make eye contact, like, that they're sure to fuck with that. And probably fuck with our ability, but like, you know, we start off with Elliot's voice, which is to me a dead giveaway that we're watching, you know, Elliot, not Mr. Robot. But when he was interfacing with Darlene, I felt like it was a very Mr. Robot line of questioning, like getting up in her face and getting that close physical contact and kind of semi-threatening.
Mm-hmm.
And then she reminded him of him hurting her. And, like, then it seems like it snapped back to Elliot. And I wonder, like, do you think there'll come a day where they play with the idea that we, as his, you know, quote-unquote friend, will not be able to tell the difference between Elliot and Mr. Robot?
Yeah, potentially. I'm a little worried about getting back to that place where I never quite know who is and isn't real at any given moment. I think the distinction between Mr. Robot and Elliot is sometimes blurry. Because they ultimately are the same person, right? I mean,
right.
There are different aspects of Elliot's personality.
Right.
But they ultimately are both Elliot. So,
yeah.
Like, where can Elliot in his worst moments become Mr. Robot without actually becoming Mr. Robot, you know? Can he act like Mr. Robot? And I feel like this is one of those scenes where it's still Elliot in there, but Elliot has the same responses and the same physical presence as a Mr. Robot. It's just only when he gets very angry, and this is a moment where he gets very angry.
Yeah, I guess that's...
because he feels betrayed by his sister.
I guess that's a fair point.
And but it's hard to tell, you know? I mean, are they going to fuck with us? Yes. The answer is definitely
and
yes.
Seems like I'm not wanting them to fuck with us. I guess my thing is, like, when they do fuck with us, I want it to, in retrospect, be like, oh, yeah, that was worth my time.
Sure.
Like, I was, you know, I was successfully had a con pulled, or it told me something that I didn't know about Elliot and the situation, and not just, like... you know, a reveal. Like, that's what the prison reveal felt like, a reveal for reveal's sake. Now, I did, because, you know, we wondered, like, what would it be like if you were just, like, a contemporary watch and binging and not reading Reddit. And I did get a couple emails, one recently this week, which made jog my memory, where a person in the off season reported, like, yeah, I watched it, I binged it, and I had no idea. It, like, blew my mind.
Okay.
When the walls turned into the prison and his mom turned into prison guards. So it's like... kind of, and I've yet to hear someone say the opposite, where it's like, oh yeah, I was watching, it was super obvious, and I was just like fucking bored. Like, it seems like the case where Reddit and the internet and the hive mind is degrading your enjoyment, because, you know, it seems obvious, like this carefully constructed plot seems retrospectively obvious.
Yeah, and I'm usually, I try to be conscious of that fact, that I am like embedded in the show in a way that most people aren't.
Like, yeah, so like
there are casual viewers.
So it turns out, like, if let's say, you know, Darlene fakes her own death or dies in a plane crash, is that dumb because we correctly interpreted the subtle foreshadowing, or is it hack because everyone saw it coming, when everyone is essentially three people on the internet, the that communicated millions of people on the internet?
Right.
I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, this is something we've been talking about for, what, 5 years now?
Yeah, but it's like,
it's television.
It's so, it came as such sharp relief for me last year because, like, you had Mr. Robot and Westworld.
Yeah.
And they're doing the exact same things, but we liked the Westworld because in the end, they managed to eke out a surprise or two, even with everything, even with essentially playing their cards all face up. Mr. Robot did the same thing and was panned because, oh, well, it came out exactly like we interpreted the signs exactly. We read the foreshadowing correctly, and there was no additional surprise. So it's like, it's all about, can you maintain that element of surprise? And I don't know if that's fair.
Yeah.
For storytellers, it's like playing the lottery. You're not getting credit for your skill or cleverness in telling the story. You're getting credit based on how well your attacker did at defeating.
How well you can obfuscate what you're trying to actually
do. Yeah, right. So, like, I don't know. I mean, I will say that, like, well, I mean, that's the thing. I guess I'm trying to think, like, this far into the season, there's less of that. But then again, like, the really popular theories are gaining a lot of steam. The Darlene plane crash theory, the White Rose building a quantum computer to hack Bitcoin theory, which I don't like very much.
I don't think I do either, but we'll talk about it, certainly.
You know, four episodes in, those are pretty well developed, and to turn out to be mostly true, I wonder if there are going to be a lot of people like, you know, boring. I said, well, you read the last chapter.
Right.
You saw the butler did it, and then are surprised that the butler did, in fact, do it.
Uh-huh. Okay, yeah, I'm with you there. This guy obviously has Elliot pegged, her Dom's partner here. Because he says, I never trusted his bug eyes. You and me both, dude.
Yep.
You and me both.
You see those bug eyes? They're up to something.
Yep. I was surprised to see that Darlene has an E-Corp calendar in her house. I don't know why she would have that, but...
It's this FBI safe house, so it's not like she picked out the decor or anything.
Yeah, but I feel like Darlene goes in there and just tears that thing down. Like, yeah, I'm going to live here, but I'm going to decorate it.
Yeah.
And it's just going to be F society everywhere.
Maybe she's just grimly accepting her fate, her imprisoned state.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe so. Okay, we go over to the status meeting, the update, where Irving tells Angela how Red Wheelbarrow gets the rib so juicy. He also says they're moving ahead in 10 days with Stage 2. Angela wants assurances that no one will be in the building when they blow it up, and Irving says arrangements have been made.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got the emergency evacuations coming out our ass.
Yeah, no problem.
So fast it could be called an emergency evacuation of its own. Hey, yo, I'm a, yeah.
Rodney.
I don't believe this guy.
All right. Then she asks if White Rose ever showed him what he showed her. Irving says, oh, yeah, no, she showed me. It's great.
Anything's possible.
Yeah.
Man, women, women to man, who knows?
Yeah, total liar. I mean, Irving, we spent last episode setting up the fact that Irving manipulates people and tells them exactly what they want to hear. So you have to think that that's happening in this scene.
And if you forgot, they give you a parallel structure with Tyrell, where he makes demands.
Yeah.
And Irving, with almost the same expression and verbiage, like, oh, yeah, sure, we'll get you. Yeah, Joanna, Ukraine, your kid, no problem. Joanna's fucking got her head sawed off, the top of her head sawed off in some morgue.
Yeah.
She's
and
about
he
35
knows that.
Degrees Fahrenheit right now, and he knows that. So I think you're supposed to use that as a Rosetta Stone to be like this, you know. And so I guess the big question is, a lot of our sci-fi concepts comes from the interaction she has with White Rose. And I feel like this calls into question that. Either Irving is not as connected as Angela is, or White Rose used some kind of trickery stuff to get Angela on her side.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that makes me say no is because there was that brief scene where she shows up at her lawyer's house, and it did imply that time had skipped a beat or been manipulated somehow. I mean, as I read these theories, I try to like cling to the things that I know are true or that were obviously suggested by the show. And I give more weight to stuff that acknowledges that and less to more, you know, that says like, you know, this thing is all going to be a quantum computer to corner the market on Bitcoin. I mean, it's not that those don't have support. It's just like they don't have any answers for some of the cornerstone scenes I'm talking about.
Yeah. So, I mean, this throws into question the whole idea that Angela was shown anything. It's perhaps that she was just convinced by White Rose. Like they had a discussion and, you know, she came away from that thinking the White Rose has the answer to undo all this.
Yeah.
We really have to, I think, reconsider the sci-fi aspects that we were leaning into because of that scene, certainly.
Yeah.
Now, there have been other hints dropped and, you know, little breadcrumbs laid out. But I think once you say, okay, the cornerstone of that, which I think is Angela's scene with White Rose last season, once that's undermined, I think the whole thing has to be brought into question.
When is the appropriate time to talk about the various theories that account for White Rose's plan?
We can talk about it now.
But I had read it. I was already going to talk about it. To me, the top theories right now are some sort of time manipulation or interdimensional sliding kind of mechanism. She's building a quantum computer.
And
I think that we've talked about the merits of that theory enough that we don't need to. Like, if you want to hear more, listen to the previous podcast. The quantum computer theory that is essentially she's building this powerful quantum computer that uses principles that are uniquely suited for attacking sources of high encryption. One of those things could be the whole premise of Bitcoin is it's got a very tough encryption that you mine bitcoins by essentially solving this cryptography question.
Yeah.
And as bitcoins are pulled out of the quote unquote ground, that equation gets incrementally harder. So like the first few bitcoins came out pretty easily. Now it's taking quite a bit of computer power and electricity to mine out a single one that is fractionally shared with a lot of people across the internet. And then also the side work from, if you don't know about Bitcoin, shit, I don't even know where to start with Bitcoin, because I'm going from like, Bitcoin is this alternate form of currency that's not backed by a government. It's not a fiat currency. It's not backed by gold standard. Its intrinsic value is the fact that it's scarce and it takes an oppressive amount of work to develop it. And then, because like right now, like one Bitcoin is worth $7,000.
Right.
And
I want to preface this with, we are not Bitcoin experts.
We are not Bitcoin experts.
I
have dabbled in Bitcoin.
Exactly how it works.
If I had put the courage of my convictions in my, I would be a millionaire right now. Like, no joke.
Yeah, because buy 1,000 Bitcoins at a dollar each.
When I first heard of Bitcoins, Bitcoins were worth about 10 cents. Mm-hmm. Next time I thought about buying them, they're worth a dollar. The next time I thought about buying them, and I did, they're worth $100. Mm-hmm. But I sold them when they were about 600, and now they're worth 7,000.
Yeah.
Holy shit. So we talked about how they're mined, and then the byproduct of all this work is also keeping the blockchain, which is this ledger of all Bitcoin transactions going back to the end of time. If you had a quantum computer that could attack certain forms of this encryption, then you could potentially mine the remaining Bitcoins. And not only that, mm-hmm. but also be able to manipulate the blockchain. So essentially you would control the world's currency and you could, you'd right. have a monopoly on it and you can make it do whatever you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the problem with that is that we know White Rose has been working on this for at least 20 years.
Right, because Mr. Robot was originally helping with the plan in some way, right?
Right, and Bitcoin is not 20 years old.
No.
So now it's possible, because everyone's known for a long time that quantum computer could kind of turn the way we do crypto analysis and cryptography and encryption like on its head. It would make things mm-hmm. that are very hard to break now somewhat trivial in certain applications, but... Really, she's putting all this project and like her life's ambition is to do quantum computing. It mm-hmm. seems a little underwhelming. And also, like, even if she's going to corner the market on a Bitcoin, if someone were to successfully do that, people would just abandon Bitcoin.
Sure,
it would be a monopoly money currency then. Mm-hmm. So it's like, why the hell would the whole world just jump on the suicide pact?
Yeah, I mean, the things that are nice about this theory, maybe we should like say some of the things
benefits.
That's got going for it, is the whole controversy between China and the other powers here, the other 19 or whatever it is,
right.
who are backing eCoin. China's backing Bitcoin, right? And
that's
under
be
the influence
somewhat
of White
significant.
Rose.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So it would make a lot of sense if China were to back eCoin, or if that was the plan, that China would back eCoin.
Yeah. It also provides a James Bondy kind of villain plot that doesn't rely on Doc Brown, Marty McFly, DeLorean shenanigans. And a
right.
lot of there's
it's
a
just
lot
plausible enough. Like quantum computing is possible, certainly.
Right. There's a lot of people that do not like the idea of this turning into Doctor Who. They want to keep it like, you know, kind of gritty, kind of, you know.
And I understand that impulse, yeah.
Right. And there's another theory.
Well, the other thing that I think maybe undermines it a little bit is this idea that quantum, that this gigantic thing that we uh-huh. saw, this machine in the first yeah. episode, was somehow a quantum computer that she's building.
Right.
I'm 99% sure that is a particle accelerator.
Right.
Because I've seen inside of particle accelerators, that's what they look like.
And now someone
says, a quantum computer would not necessarily be that big, right? And it wouldn't
sure.
require the amounts of energy that we're talking about in a particle accelerator.
Not necessarily. And that's what people, like the proponents, are hand-waving that away by saying, well, a quantum computer might require insane amount of power, like, to do it at the scale that she wants to do. And it starts to get pretty, like I said, hand-wavy there.
Sure, yeah.
So we talked about the time travel. We talked about... I'm trying to think. I know there was one other theory that's going around about what she's trying to do, and I'm blanking on it.
Hmm.
But it seems like the time travel, interdimensional shifting, and the Bitcoin are kind of the two leading proponents. Oh, I guess the other weakness of the... why is she wanting to move the thing to Africa?
Yeah, to the Congo. What
right.
advantage does that give you if you're just constructing something perfectly legal like a quantum computer?
Yeah. Or
I suppose it gives you sovereignty in order to not get it shut down
right.
when the, you know, 19 other governments realize what you're doing.
Yeah, and those people's like, oh, because she's talking about this mine she wants to start in Africa. It's a Bitcoin mine, but it's also been talked about as a cobalt mine, and like it's, you know, so like cornering the market on some of these rare earth materials so you could build these quantum computers more cheaply or more efficiently. But a lot of that same material goes into like a super powerful particle collider.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, I agree with you. This does seem like it's one of those type of Hadron-type facilities, and mm-hmm. I don't see how that has anything to do with quantum computing.
Yeah.
Like, getting at the fundamental building blocks of the universe seems like it would have a lot more to do with, like, science fiction-y kind of stuff.
Right, right. And I guess that's the one thing that I do really like about the Bitcoin quantum computing theory is it doesn't lean heavily on these crazy ideas, you know?
Yeah, that's, interdimensional travel. That's its charm.
Right. And I guess I'm one of those people who doesn't mind if it goes in that direction eventually. Yeah. Like, sure, I don't care. Like, let's go to other planets. Let's go to other dimensions, whatever. But in so much as I've seen in this show, they haven't done that yet. And they keep it grounded, and this theory keeps it grounded, and I think that is worth talking about.
Also, the other charm of it is because, like, we're talking about, like, well, she's been working on this for 20, 30 years. We know that Zhang, as the defense minister, like, maybe this started as a Chinese defense research project to break encryption, because that would be nice for a global power to have the ability to just read the, you know, United States emails. And, like, look how powerful that ability has been in the most recent election cycle. I just remembered the other thing is that White Rose is building a computer powerful enough to essentially simulate at, like, quantum resolution
the universe,
which is almost the same as time travel. If you could predict the future and then run simulations, well, if I do this, this happens. If I do this, this happens. So she could be, like, that's a way for her to consolidate her power. And that would mean that she's essentially lying to Angela, because my understanding of this theory is that it would go backwards. Like, you couldn't unfuck things that happened in the past. Now, the other thing is, like, perhaps Angela and Mr. Robot and Elliot are all inside the simulation. So from their point of view, they could. It's kind of like Cypher being put back into the Matrix. Now, a lot of people, we just got done talking about this barbecue scene where he's talking about how juicy the meat is and how it tastes good. Anything. A lot of people are drawing similarities between that and Cypher's meeting with Agent Smith. I didn't find that super persuasive.
Yeah, there were some other things that I guess could potentially be seen as nods to the Matrix.
Like when the Iranian stooge gets arrested, it's very similar to Trinity. But it's similar in the way
move is similar.
It's similar in the way that, like, cops came in, made him get on their knees, put their hands on their head.
Yeah.
But then, you know,
he didn't run up the wall and backflip.
Like a bullet time bunch of kung fu flipping and stuff. So, like, okay. Like almost any scene of federal agents busting in on someone on a computer looks like that.
That's true, yeah.
And that's why it looks like that in The Matrix until it doesn't. So, like, some of that stuff, I don't know if it's intentional homages or is suggesting that, it's where everything's in a simulation. But I think that's
right. But if you're going to say that, okay, my very similarly filmed Matrix scene is confirmation of my theory, then what do you make of the guy who's talking about interdimensional travel?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Because, like, that's definitely in there. That's not even something you need to interpret. The guy fucking says it. So,
and that's a big problem I have with the quantum mechanic thing, is that it doesn't seem to explain what seems to be the time shift that Angela experienced, and it doesn't explain, like, why there are so many Back to the Future type references that are obvious
and
right in the foreground type of things. Like, there's a little bit, like, you know, maybe they won't do the science fiction-y stuff, and they'll have some kind of Scooby-Doo type explanation for that. But, like, none of those theories completely explain all the facts in the way that, like, the time travel one does. Like, particle collider, massive energy, wanting to build an even bigger one, needing a bunch of exotic materials, the weird time shift the Angel experienced last season, the Back to the Future references. Like, there's not much that directly contradicts it, other than people like, I don't like getting too Matrixy or too Back to the Future-y in my Mr. Robot.
Sure.
And that's like, well, tough titty, it might be coming.
Maybe, or maybe not. Who knows? I think the one thing we can say for sure is that White Rose will use whatever device that she's constructing right now to make an even better rib at the Red Wheelbarrow.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's
just all, like, rib technology.
Armed with the special blend of herbs and spices that the Congo has, I just think it's stuff we can't get here in the U.S. or even in China.
Yeah.
You got to think about that, too.
That reminds me, because, like, I'm not even talking about the theories that are just laughable. Like, there's this one guy that's going on about, like, every little thing is another piece of red yarn that goes to Charlie Day's crazy conspiracy board. Like,
right.
Oh, they're eating ribs. Adam and Eve, or Eve was constructed from a rib.
Just free associating.
Angela and Elliot, A and E, Adam and Eve. Like, uh-huh. What the fuck, dude? Come on.
Yeah.
There's three breaks in your logic train just in that sentence.
Yep.
You know, it's like, okay, well, we'll gender bend Adam and Eve, and we'll assume that a conversation over a rib joint means it's like some kind of Genesis creation myth story. And like, mm-hmm. But I mean, I laugh out loud when I read that stuff, but I don't put any stock or credibility in it.
No, of course not. So we've been on the scene for a very long time, but I think the one other important thing it does is throws into question the idea that, or it brings up the idea that maybe one of the people who we know is in the E-Corp building at any given time could be killed. Because, you know, Angela asks him, like, hey, have you made arrangements to get everybody out of the building?
Mm-hmm.
Irving says, yes, we know that's probably a lie. And that Elliot works there. Not going to get fired.
Right.
He might even potentially, when he finds out, hey, this is happening over the weekend, go in to try and stop it somehow.
Yeah, and that's...
Could he end up getting... I mean, he's not going to get killed in the explosion, right? Mr. Robot is over if he gets killed. But
I would
could
think
Angela?
So. Well, I mean, I was going with the idea, like, a lot of people are saying, like, well, Angela's now finally showed her cards that she is trying to stop Elliot from doing this thing.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure, because like you said, you just gave an alternate reason why she would have Elliot fired and barred from the property, because she's concerned that he'll be in there trying to stop it as it blows up.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think that that's true. I think Angela is trying to get him fired because he'll stop the plan if they don't.
I don't know. She's got a lot of complicated looks on her face as she gets good and bad, quote-unquote good and quote-unquote bad news about the state of the project.
And I do think she cares about him still, certainly.
I just don't know. So you think she's working for Mr. Robot and the Dark Army more than she's working
for White
for
Rose,
Elliot.
More specifically, yeah. So whatever she's given.
So you're saying that she's killing two birds with one stone. She's preventing Elliot from doing further damage to the plan and protecting him from physical harm.
But I could see a scenario in which Elliot goes in and she goes, oh no, this thing's about to blow.
So she gets killed.
And she goes in.
You think
Angela's
expendable?
Yeah. Yeah, at this point. I do. But I don't know how that's going to play out.
She seems like I would have thought until, like I said, the end of last season really changed how I felt about Angela as a character. I feel like that her and Elliot are bound in the plot in a way that nobody else really is. They both had the experience with their parents. Mm-hmm. Like they're literally mirror images of each other. Mm-hmm. Darlene, I think Darlene's super important, but like I could be open to the idea of Darlene dying, but like... Angela and Elliot seem like there's something important to them, and I would be surprised if she left the series this early, but who knows?
Yeah, the only characters I think are completely guaranteed to be around until the end of this show, or very close to it, are Elliot, Mr. Robot, and White Rose. Mm-hmm. I think those are the main players that pretty much can't die until the end.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, let's move on. Elliot shows Darlene all of the research he's done to track down Tyrell and the Dark Army. He hasn't turned them in, though, because part of him wants to see where all this leads. Darlene asks Elliot to help her find them and end it once and for all. And he agrees, and he sets her up in Shayla's old apartment in order to watch him and then tail Mr. Robot when he goes out. I don't know that I buy that he could have sent all this information over to the FBI and it would have been over. A, because I just think White Rose is too powerful for that. And B, because we know the director is in White Rose's pocket at this point, you know?
Right.
I did think it was interesting that Darlene explains, hey, you could have just sent all this stuff in. And yeah, it is that easy. And then by the end of the scene, she's saying... let's not turn this in. I'm going to help you figure this out.
Right.
We're going to track him down ourselves.
Right.
I don't know. She's sending conflicting messages there in that scene.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, I guess. The most interesting part of this scene is Elliot saying he wants to see, some part of him wants to see where this leads.
Right.
Because that tells us that it's not all Mr. Robot pushing this forward, right?
Yeah.
Because I don't think the part he's talking about is Mr. Robot.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, I think you're also right that like Mr. Robot is not an alien entity.
Yeah.
It is within, like, you know, Elliot, the set of Elliot contains Mr. Robot in his entirety.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even know, like, it could be like that's just literal, like, or not literal, like this is shit. I don't even know. This it's hard for me because, like, is he, when he says that, he knows that Mr. Robot, because he's made this point himself, like, Mr. Robot's me and I'm Mr. Robot. When he says that, is he just trying, is he self-aware enough to know that he's grappling with his inner nature?
Mm-hmm.
Or is he saying that, like, I don't, like, lack the willpower to stop this? I want to see it through on some subconscious level. I'm always interpreted, like, how literally are we to interpret his words?
Yeah, are we supposed to understand,
like, Mr. Robot,
what he's saying on a you know, audience level, or are we supposed to say that he understands exactly?
Yeah,
what,
like,
he's
Mr.
saying.
Robot might be a construct that just allows him to do things outside his society's moral envelope,
mm-hmm.
and have, like, a plausible deniability.
Right,
like the Elliot's really kind of an evil asshole. But we, I mean, like, we all have that evil asshole inside of us, right? But something stops us, like, ugh,
sure.
Well, I'd hate for that to happen to me, or I'd hate to get caught, or, like, and Mr. Robot's a way for him to override that impulse.
Yeah.
Without any kind of argument, or just compartmentalize it. The psychology and the mechanics of it are pretty fascinating.
Yeah, and at the end of the scene when he says, you know, whatever he does, it's not me. That was a sad moment for me because,
yeah.
you know, it's got to be rough having this evil personality or this part of you that you can't quite control, you know?
Right.
It's not just like, oh, Elliot's bad because he is Mr. Robot and Mr. Robot is doing all these horrible things, because there is also that big part of Elliot that doesn't want to do these things.
Yeah.
He's being dragged along by the worst impulses.
But it makes you wonder, like, this moment of weakness he has where he puts his head on the desk in this upcoming scene and Angela catches him.
Yeah.
Is
why
that,
did
a
that happen?
Was that a moment of weakness or a lapse in his concentration, or is that deliberate, like, lowering of his guards because he wants to get caught, or
sabotage,
he wants that's the way that his whatever the Mr. Robot part of him is trying to keep the Elliot part of him honest.
I don't know.
That's the thing. Like,
it's hard to know.
You really don't know. And you know, there again, like, that's what the more annoying things about the prison is. Not only was it, you know, was it worth it? Was it mind blowing? Whatever. But, like, it makes, like, this shit that Elliot's saying, these, like, monologues and stuff, like, what do they even mean? They don't seem like they mean anything, because Sam can then completely deconstruct them later and make them say whatever he means. Like, literally the world around us might not even be real.
Right.
And that's, like, to the extent that that keeps, the sense that happens, it takes you out of the story, right?
Yeah, I suppose so.
But it's like, now it's like, yeah, like, is Elliot tired, and is this a humanizing him, or is this Mr. Robot wanting him to get caught? Like, I don't know. Who can say for sure?
Yeah, it's tough to say for sure. Like we said, I think either episode one or two, they have done some things to ground this season a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, like, oh, when is it Mr. Robot and when is it Elliot? And I think I'm inclined to say the entire time they've played that pretty straight so far. But like you said, you can always go back and change it.
Yeah, you
right?
can always
you can
have
always
a flashback
say,
of Elliot
yeah.
having this car, and, like, it's not Elliot, it's now Mr. Robot, and Mr. Robot has a monologue
yeah.
saying, I figured out how to fool you this whole time, and that's what I've been...
Right.
And I'm
I'm sorry, friends, I've been lying to you again, you know?
Or, like, not sorry, like, you know, like, Mr. Robot addresses us, like, you've been talking
yeah,
to Elliot
yeah.
this whole season, it's been me fucking...
But until they do that...
Yeah,
I have to take it on face value.
I get it, but
so,
it makes you a bigger sucker, right?
I guess I don't feel like a sucker at that point. I feel more like it's almost like a not a challenge to the audience, but it's more like I feel more along for the ride, you know, than if I never in the first place. If I know that they're playing with who is and isn't real, and then they say, oh, all along this person has not been real,
right?
Like they were hinting at with, like, Tyrell last season. That got very confusing and very annoying to me.
Okay.
Whereas this time they seem to be playing it straight, and if they twist that up later on, I'll then go with it. But it doesn't make me feel foolish.
Well, I mean, it doesn't make me feel foolish. It's more like you start, what I guess what I'm getting to the point is that's the danger of that type of storytelling is you start it thinking, is, like, yeah. why do I care?
Okay.
Because, yep. like, all the stuff I'm emotionally engaged in is not real, and I have no way, like you said, like, oh, they're setting all these rules about what's real, what's not, and if they don't respect those rules, then, well, you know, like, what the fuck?
And that's how I felt at the end of season two. I felt very much like...
I just think it's funny, like, I guess I don't have the confidence that they, other than, like, I guess Sam Esmail got negative feedback, and why would he do it again, but I don't I don't see from just looking at my eyes at a story how I know that this stuff is actually realer than last year's prison plot. And when sure. I say that, I don't mean, like, the situation Elliot's in, like... I guess how would you feel if you found out that Christian Slater's Mr. Robot character has been pretending to be Elliot a bunch of times this season? I guess that would annoy me.
Yeah.
Because I'd have no way to know that.
I suppose so. And they're also telling me the exact opposite throughout the beginning of the season, right? Like, Mr. Robot on multiple occasions had said, like, oh, I can't see what Elliot's doing. Or mm-hmm. this would be so much easier if Elliot and I were still had the relationship we did last season.
Right.
Yeah, I guess maybe I would feel a little bit betrayed.
Yeah, that's more like,
a
you
little
know,
annoyed.
That plot twist is more like, you know, along the lines of The Usual Suspects and not the more along the lines of Signs.
But I'm also not nearly as confused in this season. You know?
Okay.
It's not up in the air at any given moment, and I feel more grounded right now, which is ultimately, in my mind, a good thing.
Okay.
For this season. And it's why I've been enjoying it a lot more than season two.
All right.
Okay, let's keep going. The FBI busts a guy who puts on a mask and has a camera. And this is the guy we find out who posted the F Society video to Vimeo. We kind of talked about this scene in The Matrix Illusions. Elliot is then sitting at his desk at E-Corp pondering why the idea of seeing where the plan leads excites him so much. Angela catches him looking at the shipping manifest and lying about it, and she acts like it's nothing, and then asks him if he's coming to the party. But, of course, you know, she takes note.
Mandatory fun.
Yeah.
Love the mandatory fun.
Yeah, I've been part of some mandatory fun in my time.
Me too.
It's not fun.
Yeah.
It's not as described.
Like meeting with your friends, your work friends, after yeah. work for drinks to talk about work. It's fine.
That's fun.
Telling everyone to show up at fucking Dave and Buster's for, you know, some rah-rah. That's, no, that's like, that's unpaid work.
It's like, called team building.
Yeah.
Team
yeah.
building.
But it's, you can't you can't artificially build a team. It's like,
yeah.
It's like taking a hammer and banging on an engine and saying you're engineering.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, you're not. You're just fucking banging on, like, you know, it's, I don't know, it's. I mean, this is off topic, but it amuses me that corporations go to these retreats and they go to these seminars and they read these books that essentially describe the situations that healthy companies with healthy work environments experience. Mm-hmm. And they think, aha, if I emulate those behaviors, the underlying principles and foundations will automatically spring.
Right.
And what they fail to realize is those principles and foundations create those behaviors, those tight-knit teams and behaviors where people want to hang out and have fun,
right.
Forcing them to do that when shit's toxic underneath or haphazard or dumb just makes everybody feel like you're in a fucking Dilbert strip.
Uh-huh.
And E Corp is definitely the latter.
Yes.
E Corp does not have principles and foundations and core values.
For sure. Yeah, and also, man, fuck this guy. Fuck this guy in the cube next to Elliot.
Yeah, he's the worst.
It's not a funny character.
No.
It's nothing I want to see ever again on the screen. He's already had too much screen time. I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't understand what they're trying to advance here.
It's not adding anything to the show.
Because at some point it's like, look how gross this guy is, but if he's on every season or if he's on every fucking episode and he gets a mugshot and he's like, do you think he's gross? I think he's gross, but now you're starting to like really dwell on him.
Right. I think
maybe
he's
not
he's
so
funny.
Bad. Yeah. He's funnier. Like, I mean, he's got a point about taking like, it just no.
And you can effectively do this kind of stuff. Like they did a couple of episodes ago where Elliot was trying to you know, enact his plan but to get the document shipped. And that was funny. That worked.
But that's the point. Like, Elliot, we know Elliot has the power to do that. This guy is disgusting. Yeah. And he's got to be sexually harassing these women and creating a hostile work environment. So, but it doesn't rise to the level of something that Elliot would, like, you know, Elliot only cares about people manipulating safety recalls and people
or
that
child
are,
sex ring proprietors, you
right?
Know,
or like, I'm just talking about the stuff that he did at E Corp or people that are skimming profits off of whatever. So it's like, that's the important stuff. What this guy's doing is not that important. That's the message they're sending, whether they realize it or not. And
I agree with that, but okay. Because I don't think Elliot was doing that because these people were bad people. I think the reason he was doing it is to get his plan. You know, to get his plan in place.
But he
to
said
get
that,
up to someone who... I know he said also that was a side effect that was nice.
Right.
But he wasn't doing it because of that. He wouldn't have done that otherwise. He was trying to get his plan enacted.
I get it, but I guess, like, if you're cooling your heels and you're trying to make E-Corp a better place, it's conspicuous that this guy right beside him, who's just a nonstop sexual harassment lawsuit or worse waiting to happen, just gets, you know, he's just seen as annoying.
Yeah.
Not
if
really
anything,
destructive.
Yeah, I don't know why Elliot doesn't do something about it just because he's annoying.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. This is the guy
like,
wishes
you don't
he...
have to take down his life. You could just get him fired.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not saying that Sam Esmail, like, is cool with sexual harassers. I'm just saying that, like, there's a way you can look at that and, like it or not, it's somewhat normalizing that behavior by saying these are the things that, like, a Mr. Robot or an Elliot would take action against, and these are the ones that are just like, oh, you roll your eyes and like, oh, what are you going to do? What can you do to this guy?
Right. You could not show him on the screen. How about that?
Yeah.
Because I'm done with him.
And that's the thing, like, that doesn't ring true to my idea. Like, I've been in corporate programming culture, and that, like, it can get bro-y, especially in, like, startups and stuff, but no fucking way at a place like E-Corp would that behavior be. I don't know. Maybe I'm naive, but, like, I have a hard time believing that that would just be cool at anywhere.
If it was Atari in the 80s, okay, now we're talking.
Maybe, yeah.
Now
we're
talking, but... Yeah, some buttoned up corporation like this. I don't know.
Like, if nothing else, because they're afraid of being sued.
Yeah.
They would clamp down on that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right. So Dom interrogates the guy who uploaded the F Society video. She gets absolutely nothing until she asks if White Rose is his leader, which kind of breaks his silence here. And he says, F Society is his leader. Did you get a very White Rosian tone from his voice when he finally speaks?
I didn't.
Holy shit, I thought it was exactly White Rose's voice.
Huh.
So much so that I think they're either... I think what they're trying to do is connect this person to White Rose, which I don't know why they bother, because they already did that when, you know, Dom's questioning, oh, how was it so easy to catch this guy? And also when he says Dark Army, or F Society is my leader, we know that F Society is part of... essentially White Rose's plan. So I don't know that they needed to do that.
Well, they're just trying to connect the F Society to Iran. They already have.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that because like, you know, Trenton, wasn't she? I think I saw on Reddit asserted, and I didn't bother to look it up, that she's Iranian too. So they've already got I think White Rose is already taking a tenuous connection and then adding more to make it like, and the FBI is going to go for it. Like, the only one calling bullshit on it is Dom.
Yeah.
The other guy's like, White Rose, that's like, what, are you going to worry about Morpheus and Trinity next? Like,
right, the boogeyman.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, of course, Dom, I mean, is that kind of getting annoying? The fact that Dom is always right all the time and no one listens to her? Like, this guy's, I don't think, dirty. I think he's just a dumb fuck.
Well, the reason people don't listen to her is because her boss is dirty, right? Like, the other examples we have is a guy who's clearly working against her.
Yeah.
So this is kind of one of the few examples we have of someone who isn't working against her, but is so dumb.
And maybe it's an example of, like, this looks like it's a conspiracy. It's like one of those things like,
yeah,
you know, the first guy to crack MK Ultra or start talking about it was a lunatic, right?
Sure.
The CIA is experimenting with mind control powers, injecting people with drugs against their will, and trying to say, like, okay, whatever, buddy.
Yeah,
and it's true. Like, that's the thing about the insidious things about conspiracy theories is they all sound like nonsense until you assemble enough evidence.
Right.
So what is a skeptic to do? I guess don't believe in conspiracy theories until there's solid evidence. We could try doing that. But, like, maybe they're trying to, like, Dom is so far ahead of the curve as far as understanding hacker culture And I mean, I think that's also like a real life problem, because I've heard opinion, you know, especially nowadays, that America is really far behind like counter cyber warfare. Like other countries, China and Russia are way ahead of us in those. So maybe like the FBI really is this kind of oblivious about someone as powerful and connected as White Rose existing.
I mean, all of our best technology people tend to go either to Silicon Valley or to Wall Street. Like, that's where a lot of our talent goes in these technical arenas. So
And we also like seeing town as like, oh, we can like we, I think we've been worried about them shutting down our power grid and, you know, causing planes to crash in midair, and the idea that they would just fuck with Facebook and Twitter to get us at each other's throat.
Yeah.
And you can do that with 500 Russians in a building chain smoking and just crap flooding.
Right.
Like, that's like that never entered our it's almost like
it seems like the Cold War lessons have been lost, you know.
Well, it's like but it's like it's almost like that Monty Python idea of the world's funniest joke. They translate it to German, and you just march around a battle line screaming this, and like the Germans die laughing. This
okay,
like
all right,
like that sounds ridiculous. Imagine like if you know this 4-star general is sitting there. It's like, gentlemen, we have to troll, we have to meme, we have to. It's the only way to take down, and we have to meet. So we have to meet Pepe with Pepe. Like it's fucking ridiculous. It's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah,
but. But it also happens to be the cutting edge of cyber warfare. Right. So, and that's like, you know, she's saying essentially Morpheus from the Matrix, kind of a real thing. And this guy's saying that's stupid. It's ridiculous. Yeah. So, as we said in the outset, this podcast is sponsored by Sonos. And they want us to tell us about their latest addition to the Sonos home sound system, the Sonos One. And, you know, if you've been a longtime listener to the Bald Move, at least this year, we've talked about Sonos a lot, how great their home entertainment system stuff sounds, how great it sounds when they're playing your favorite TV shows and your favorite music and movies. This is the same essentially great sound technology, and now they've added Amazon Alexa, the easy-to-use voice-activated system. And you might like, what do I need a voice-activated speaker for?
Well, I'll tell you, you have not used a voice activated speaker yet.
Yeah, like if you like listening to music or podcasts like I do when you're doing work around the house, or when you're brushing your teeth, or when you are cooking food and your hands are like messy and like you want to turn up the volume a little bit, or you want to pause, or you want to switch to the next track. Normally, you got to clean your hands, got to dry them off, you got to go walk over to the thing, you got to touch it. Now you can just say, Alexa, next track.
Yep.
Alexa, max volume. Alexa, 57% volume. Like in anything. Like you can order things off Amazon. You can check the weather. Like you can check the time. You can
find out what temperature do I need to cook this chicken to? You know.
Yeah. How's the traffic? How long do you bake French bread? If you're like this, like anything that you can type into a Google search, or you can order online, or like it's just. It works really just naturally. Like, you don't have to, like, think about how you phrase it. It's really cool. And there's, like, all kinds of stuff that, like, kid, like, you know, like, my son loves to, like, have it, like, tell him jokes and play games with it. It's just really cool technology. And the thing is, like, if you've used a voice assistant on your cell phone, I promise you this is better, because it's a dedicated, I don't know what about the size or the equipment, but, like, I've always had problems with my phones getting it to understand my mush mouth. This thing, it's essentially flawless.
Yeah. It probably has a better microphone built in, I'd imagine.
Probably.
Probably understands what you're saying a little better. The other thing you could do with this that is specific to this show is you can participate in some of the ARG stuff that's going on. Like, Mr. Robot has ARG elements specifically for the Amazon Alexa stuff.
Yeah.
Which integrates and lets you play, like, this choose-your-own-adventure sort of thing. Or it did. When the episode was airing and shortly thereafter. If they do more stuff like that, you can participate in that with some Alexa device.
Yeah, and as a free benefit, you also pipe everything you say directly to the NSA and the Dark Army.
Well, benefit?
I mean, you know, it's like it's going to get to them one way or another.
That's true.
Might as well just like, hey, nothing to worry about over here. Just turning up my volume when I'm brushing my teeth.
It looks good when you voluntarily hand over.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. They like it. Like Elliot, would not have an Amazon Alexa, but, you know, Elliot's a heroin-addicted, maladjusted...
That's true.
...person who has no control of his life. Is that what you want to be?
The NSA might look the other way when you're torrenting the Mr. Robot files, right?
And they're going
to have
to.
As long as you provide the Alexa data.
And they're going to have to, because you're about to commit theft. You're about to steal this product for 10% under its list value.
That's true.
And I don't think it's theft because Sonos is letting you do it. Jim, what does that offer?
Right now, Sonos is offering the listeners of 2-Bit Encryption the Mr. Robot podcast. 10% off one order of $2,500 or less for any products on Sonos.com. It's available for a limited time only, and you can't combine it with other discounts or promotions. But if you go to Sonos.com and you use the promo code ROBOT10, that's capital ROBOT10 at Sonos.com, you can receive 10% off your order of $2,500 or less.
Jim, if they took advantage of that Sonos offer, could they say, Alexa, sign me up for club, baldmove.com?
I think you just signed like 50 people up for the club by saying
sweet,
that.
Sweet, sweet. Anyone in Sonos?
Alexa, make a donation to Bald Movement on the order of $200.
300 bitcoins to our PayPal account. That doesn't even work. But the reality is, the only reason we're doing a Mr. Robot podcast. Well, I mean, we watch Mr. Robot for free. We podcast for money, and we do a lot of podcasts. Like, if you heard our housekeeping, we released like 37 podcasts last week. We worked all weekend long. The only way we can do that is because this is our main source of income. And if you go to club.baldmove.com, you can keep us afloat, you keep us independent, you keep us telling it like it is, giving you the podcast the way you are accustomed to hearing it. You get a bunch of bonus features. We talked about the first run movies that we do, like the Thor review. We talk about quips, our Quit Your Pitching comedy podcast. We did an Empire Business last week where we talked about, this is the thing, like, you want to know where your hard-earned money is going, right to our pocketbooks and to our liquor shelf and also our bandwidth bills and all that stuff. Like, we kind of run this fully transparent as a personal experiment, so you can kind of see the fortunes rise and fall of Bald Move if you're interested in that. If not, there's got to be a feed. Ad-free feeds. You don't have to listen to me drone on and on about this again. Go to club.baldmove.com to get the full pitch. Free 30-day trial for signing up. Try it out, club.baldmove.com.
All right, let's move on to Elliot coming home after the work party. He and Darlene take Flipper for a walk, during which they agree to a vengeance pact, which I assume would include Flipper, right? If Flipper dies or either one of them die, Flipper's got to go after
him. I'm worried about Flipper. Flipper seems like he's being neglected again.
Is he? He got walked.
Did he?
Yeah, he was on this walk.
Oh, but I'm saying, like, at the end, Darlene, like, you know, Flipper is in distress in the apartment. She comes in, leaves her photo. And
yeah, that's true.
Everything means nothing to me, mm-hmm. Dog. I'm out of here.
Yeah, and we know that Elliot's going to be gone at least for the weekend,
yeah.
Presumably. So Elliot apologizes also for pushing Darlene away. And apparently Darlene's coked up. Darlene's just eight-balled out of her mind here, which I guess is good for staying awake. Not so good for your paranoia. Not so good for a lot of things.
See, but like if I am correct in that she's slowly assembling her escape path here, she could be lying about that to cover the jitteriness of her telling lies.
Yeah.
And to someone that's very close to her that might be able to smoke it out otherwise.
Okay. Maybe so. I mean, under constant FBI surveillance, it's tough to get coked up.
That's what I'm saying. So we don't.
It's pretty impressive if she could.
Right.
Okay, Dom and her partner talk about the video and why this guy was so easy to find. And her partner asks why this guy surrendered instead of following the Dark Army MO of blowing his head off, which I think is interesting. It's because, I mean, he should be drawing the conclusion, everything is screaming, red alert, they wanted you to catch this guy. But this guy's so dumb. I don't know. Dom makes a connection, though, so that's good.
Right.
And then we go over to Darlene following Mr. Robot, and he sees him meeting with Angela before they get in a taxi and drive off. At the beginning of the scene...
Man, they teleported once they got into the subway station.
Yeah.
Like, they were one staircase ahead, and suddenly they're across the tracks and out the other door. Like, okay, this confirmed interdimensional travel.
Yep, for sure.
Mr. Robot has a portal gun.
I thought the beginning of this scene is interesting because... Darlene is downloading a movie called Shazam, which is not actually a real movie. It's this Mandela effect where everybody thinks they remember a movie from the 90s starring Sinbad where he played a genie, but it doesn't actually exist.
Right.
And it's you can go on Snopes and you can look it up. Yep. It's not a real thing. There have been doctored images to make you think that it is. There's this collective like, oh, well, Shaq played Kazam or he was a genie. And then people just like swap his face, I guess.
Right. No,
in their minds.
What's funny is like this is the first Mandela effect that actually got me.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, I don't remember seeing...
The Berenstain thing got me. Like, I thought it was spelled the other way.
Huh. See, I didn't, like, I didn't. That. So, and, you know, obviously, the... Do you know why the... Did you explain why the Mandela effect is called the Mandela effect?
I actually don't know.
Because it's, like, there is... the first time, I guess, it was identified, there was, like, people, when they found out, like, Nelson Mandela won a Nobel Peace Prize, they're like, what the fuck? He was dead. I remember seeing news articles where Nelson Mandela died. And, you know, people like when they when they get confirmed, like with the truth or like when they find out, died, like, oh, he was still alive because he just now died. Mm-hmm. But I haven't fallen for any of those. And the Shazam one got me because like I feel like, yeah, like I did see Sinbad. Plus, but I think it's like it's one of those things where like Sinbad is kind of, you know, Arabian Nights kind of name. And
right.
then, like,
right.
he did do a lot of those silly-type movies. And Shaq, you know, like, Shaq.
And there were genies sometimes in the Sinbad movies that he definitely wasn't in.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, like, the association gets fuzzy, and then you remember that there is a Shazam.
Right.
So, I thought
Which
that
there
was
wasn't,
pretty clever.
Actually,
there was
Kazam with a genie.
And it's starting to wrap into itself because for College Humor, Sinbad had did.
Oh, fuck.
Have you seen this?
No, I haven't
seen
it.
Yeah, they recorded a bunch of, like, director's cut scenes for Shazam.
Okay.
So now, like, I feel like 10 years from now, no one will doubt that there's a Shazam because they won't get the fact that, like, College Humor will go out of, you know, go bankrupt. And no,
Snopes will still be around to debunk it.
Snopes will, but, you know, Snopes is already, like, there's already, they're under an insidious attack from being fake news as we speak.
Oh,
so,
boy.
30-some% of the population doesn't believe them anymore. Because nothing's real and nothing makes
Maybe
sense.
Maybe the we're Chinese government should go after Snopes.
We're
just
all,
place a bunch of fake articles there.
Yeah, like, you know, plant some child porn on their servers and get them taken down.
Yep. All right.
I just think it's funny that the site that I remember first, like, cataloging all of the weird urban legends about the Magic Kingdom is now, like, a bastion of truth. In the world, like for investigative journalism and reporting.
Yeah, it's a weird twist.
Yeah.
All right, Angela finds out that the backup shipments have been rerouted all over the country and tells Tyrell he's incredibly pissed about Elliot's sabotage and the accelerated timeline that White Rose implemented. And Angela tells Tyrell that they can still get this done if they move the paper records over the weekend and get Elliot removed from E-Corp. And Tyrell's laying all the blame on Mr. Robot and tells him that he's taking over the operation, which causes Mr. Robot to choke him and threaten him. And then that sort of glitches out Mr. Robot and Elliot comes out. And
yeah, what's up with that?
He briefly sees Angela and Tyrell before he's sedated. I don't know. This is where the lines... You know, I still feel like they're playing by these ground rules that they've set, where if we see Elliot... It's Elliot. If we see Mr. Robot, it's Mr. Robot.
It's definitely Elliot, but I'm saying, like, what do you think it's him doing? Like,
I don't
is
know
Elliot
why it's
not capable of physical violence? Is
I'm
that
not
what,
sure.
Is that what caused him to break down?
Yeah, I think a lot of stuff has been weighing on Elliot about this 5-9 stuff. It's the collateral damage that he's talking about. You know, people dying, this building potentially blowing up and killing more people. I think all of this is causing Elliot to second guess the plan, which we've seen over this season. And yeah, it's starting to, I think, maybe affect him in ways that he doesn't quite get, ways that he didn't expect.
Mm-hmm.
And ways that Mr. Robot didn't expect, you know, because that's the thing here. Like, Elliot has arrested control from Mr. Robot in this heated moment.
Yeah. Accidentally. It's not like, it's not like he was struggling for it. It's just like, just popped out of
And so much of this is subconscious, right?
Like, yeah.
When Elliot doesn't choose to turn into Mr. Robot, Mr. Robot at this point doesn't choose to come out or go away.
It would be interesting because, like, if Mr. Robot can't commit physical violence, that's a huge limitation on him.
Sure.
Like, if, like, the second he goes to slap somebody or choke somebody or shoot somebody, Elliot can reassert control of that. That puts a lot of interesting limitations on the Mr. Robot character. I'm not saying that's what's happening.
Sure.
But it is something I want to point out.
Yeah, and I guess I didn't quite expect the reaction from Tyrell about finding out about Elliot's multiple personalities to be so severe. Mm-hmm. But I guess when you combine it with this sabotage that's been happening, it's totally believable, you know, that this disillusionment combined with treachery, betrayal, would cause this this guy to think that Tyrell, that Elliot is no longer the god that he was expected to be.
Right on.
And I also thought it was ironic that Angela is using the sedative for the exact opposite reason that Elliot told her to. Knock out Elliot here instead of Mr. Robot, which we knew Elliot was, or we knew Angela was on his side, so it's to be expected.
Kinda.
Yeah. I mean, in as much as you can know anything on Mr. Robot.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Because I get this distinct impression from the first episode that she's placating Mr. Robot, but really serving Elliot.
I mean, maybe, but she's also serving White Rose. That's one thing that I'm certain
keep,
of.
Yeah, every time you say that, I'm like, shit, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, she is part of the Dark Army at this point. So in as much as they want Stage 2 to go off, so does she.
So I guess Angela's on her own side.
Yeah.
But she's trying to protect...
She is trying
to protect
Elliot.
She's trying to protect Elliot in a way that I don't think she is trying to protect Mr. Robot.
Yeah, yeah. She's trying to... You know, this idea that she's managing him is not just... It's to keep him safe.
So I'm going
to
try to go forward analyzing things from that prism, that she is working for White Rose's purposes, but she does want to protect Elliot.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that makes sense.
Okay, so Darlene meets with Dom at a bar, and she wants to have a normal human interaction, which means Dom has to buy her a drink and divulge a whole bunch of personal information. And she guilts Dom into playing along. Then she says they're playing the game her way, without a wire, and it's going to cost her brother. This scene feels like social engineering.
Oh, yeah.
Top to bottom. And I can't believe that Dom doesn't understand that.
Because, like, even I didn't have to go to Reddit to see this. I'm like, oh, really?
Yeah,
you
want
to know your hometown? Uh-huh. Want to know your brothers and sisters? And those are password reset questions.
Right. What was the model of your first car, Dom?
Yeah. What are the last four loans you took at, and what was the amount of them? Like, it's. So that's what I'm saying. This is the next piece of the puzzle where she has given up her identity and made memorable situations so people can say, oh, she was acting strange and erratic. She is now getting what she needs to steal the identity of an FBI agent.
For what purpose?
For what purpose? Like earlier in this, we see her looking at flights. Was it Bali? Is that where Cisco wanted to go? Singapore?
Maybe. I don't remember the place.
But it's like we see her looking at flights and like it's, and now she's like, hey, you know, my way is no wire and no direct control. Like I feel like she's getting ready to disappear.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how that harshes her relationship with Elliot. Mm-hmm. I guess if... The only reason they're not picking up Elliot right now is because she's working for them and buying him time. If she just like boned out, I'm sure the FBI would pick him up this next second.
Yeah, sweat him. You gotta try
it. So maybe that's what he'll see this as a betrayal in retrospect.
Yeah. All right. Tyrell asks Irving to move the date to move it to a later date because he's not ready. But he says it has to happen on Monday. Tyrell complains that he lost his god partner, so Irving tells him that Elliot wasn't the god, he is the god, and he needs to finish the job, which inspires an idea in Tyrell, but he'll need the full force of the Dark Army to accomplish it. And if it works, he requests that he be allowed to go to the Ukraine with his wife and child, which Irving says, yeah, I'll look into it. Okay, I'll see what I can do.
Yeah.
Knowing full well that they're dead. Well, his wife is dead. His child is still alive.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. I don't know if people are necessarily picking up on this. I know Reddit has, but for casual viewers, the reason they're going on Monday is because White Rose wants to go ahead with the plan on the day or very shortly after the UN vote comes in, right?
Right.
On this Congo thing.
Yeah.
So that's the accelerated timeline. And I feel like this is where White Rose starts to get sloppy. mm-hmm. when she starts to make it personal, when she starts to use part of the plan as a spite.
They might accomplish it and get it done on time, but will be as elegant? Will the tracks right. be as well hid?
And this, I think, is her weakness.
Will Elliot be a part of the project, and to what extent is that critical to her? Because it sounds like he's getting frozen out.
Yeah.
What does he need the full force of the Dark Army for?
That's the biggest question I have.
Because my assumption is the Dark Army is more or less the mask-wearing goons that kill people.
Yes.
I think he's wanting to order a hit on Elliot.
Uh-huh.
But there's no way White Rose will sign off on that. I mean, she's fine with killing Elliot if the plan is over. So if she's convinced that the plan, maybe she will. Maybe she will.
I know it's not going to work, but...
I know it's not going to work either. Yeah. I don't know how Elliot stops it, because his talents don't lie in that direction.
No.
If you send four goons with masks and submachine guns after him, I think he's going to die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is obviously the scene we were talking about where Irving lies to Tyrell, tells him what he needs to hear to keep him going mm-hmm. about his wife and child. Yeah, I don't know what else to say about this scene.
Okay.
I'm ready for the Angela and Philip scene?
Yes.
Angela asks Philip to fire Elliot. He agrees to do it. Then Elliot tells Mr. Robot that they're good to go, and then he needs to stay at her place for the weekend. Mr. Robot worries about Elliot seeing her and Tyrell together, which he thinks is a big deal. I think is a big deal, too. Angela says she'll handle it, and then gets a message from Irving that says they'll be ready to go on Monday. So Tyrell has figured something out that has convinced Irving.
And the look on her face is not like, oh, thank God. You know, like when she gets confirmation things. Yeah. I don't know what to think about that. Also, if there's on the TV in the background, one of the Chiron crawls says that recent evidence links F Society attacks to Iran. So
it's already
happening.
Already working.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. The official story is being slowly manipulated away from the truth.
Yeah. So this is a scene that we were talking about earlier where Philip would essentially be signing his own death warrant if he were to fire Elliot at this point. We know that he's hep to what's going on here with White Rose and Angela. So
how's he going to stop it? This is happening Monday.
I don't know how he's going to stop it, but certainly he's not going to play along. Right. Mm. He's not just going to fire Elliot thinking, yep, that's what Angela wants.
Well, but
so
here's one way to interpret his state, the viewpoint. One is I'm not sufficiently cowed by White Rose. I'm angry. And I'm going to try to thwart her plan still. She has not still significantly demonstrated her power over me. So fuck her.
Mm-hmm.
The other is. Okay, White Rose / Zhang is a lot more scarier than I gave them credit for. I'm really afraid I should do whatever they want. If he just pointedly told me that Angela works for him, so if she comes up with some weird request and says, I can't explain it, I better back it.
Mm-hmm.
And you are going all in on the former and not the latter.
I am, because I think White Rose made a mistake, or Zhang made a mistake when he told Philip, just to stick it to Philip, that he's got Angela in his pocket, and that his success always follows his own. I think that is such a slap in the face to Philip that Philip is maybe not smart, but certainly understandably justified by striking back in whatever way he can. Mm-hmm. And this is a moment where he can do it, where Angela and therefore White Rose is requesting something of him.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the leverage here. He's got the power. And if he were to fire Angela and revoke all of her access, does that change the plan at all? Does that make it so they can't just go in and fix the shipping manifests and get everything shipped?
I have no
idea. What if he fires both of them?
I don't know. I don't think that Angela is as I think Angela's important to White Rose in so much as that she allows them to control Elliot.
Sure.
But I could be wrong on that. Maybe Angela has... Because they've been telling us that Angela's special and more than just her relationship with Elliot for all of season two. Hmm. So maybe she's got something. I don't know. Like, it's like I just watched Stranger Things last weekend. I'm wanting to plug in, like, you know, her and Elliot are experimental twins, and she's got, like, she's the Princess Leia, that she's a Jedi, she doesn't even know it yet, and but Elliot's been trained to be a Jedi by his father, and I don't know. Like, it maybe they're superpowered or in some way, and Angela's just now coming into her own.
I was just going with she has probably the access required to adjust the shipping.
There's that
manifest.
Too, sure.
That's as far as I was going with it. But sure, if you want to go to Secret Wonder Twins, why not?
Form of an ice bucket. I'm ready. Angel's going to be a giant eagle. It's going to be cool.
Yeah, I just don't see Philip rolling over on this when he knows that Angela is in White Rose's pocket.
Yeah, I'm trying to think as... Looking back to that conversation where White Rose overtly threatened, like, did he look like, I felt like he was pretty inscrutable. You could read about anything onto it.
I think he was shaken, but he's had some time to recuperate and collect his thoughts. And I think now he might.
I don't see how he fucks the plan hard enough to matter.
Yeah, I don't either. But certainly he can't just play into it either. That would be even more foolish than to try something, I suppose. All right, and the final scene, Darlene packs up her bag, leaves the family photo on Elliot's shelf, and takes off. You think Darlene's really leaving this time?
So, you know, shall we consider the Darlene plane crash theory? Do you have a handle on that?
I suppose, no. That's the one that I specifically avoided because it sounded insane right off the bat. I'm like, plane crash, Darlene, she's not on a plane. I know there was the flight stuff, but
well, here's the thing, like, there's been a lot of airplane imagery around her. Like, when she went into Cisco's apartment early on in season 2, she was standing right underneath a model airplane. And there's a scene where she's meeting Trenton's family, and one of the kids is in the foreground while her mother is arguing with Trenton, and, like, she's in the mid-ground, Darlene is in the background, slightly out of focus, and there's a kid that's playing with an airplane, and they're making a right in front of Darlene and the camera's eye.
Okay.
And then when she loses her shit in the bathroom, there is a picture of an airplane on the bathroom wall. Combined with I wasn't able to place the scene, but there was a scene I think from a flashback earlier in this episode of her, or earlier in this season, with her dealing with Elliot planning the 5-9 attacks, where she's standing underneath a red, like, security light bulb, which, you know, if you're new to 2-bit encryption, it's something we've been covering a long time, but there's a thing on the show where red lanterns equal death.
Yeah.
Red lights equals equal death, and it's been a pretty firm pattern. So the fact that she's looking at airline reservations now, I think there's a way to take that she's going to fake her death as a way to get out of this, and you know, she'll be gone, but maybe she comes back in a later season, or maybe later this season to help Elliot or save the day. I don't know, but there is a lot of there for this theory.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot of consistent airplane and crash imagery with her conspicuously researching flights. I don't know. I think there's something to it. I'm kind of a fan of the Darlene airline crash theory.
All right. I guess these things aren't mutually exclusive, but my personal idea of what she's about to do is go after Angela in some way, which leans into the idea of losing her brother, right? If Angela is important to Elliot and Darlene takes down Angela in some way or connects her to this whole plot, to where the FBI takes her down, that could certainly cause her to lose Elliot.
Right.
Cause I mean, that's the thing, like, early on in this episode when she's like, she goes to Elliot and he's all angry about this thing. He says, look, the best lead we have is me, because he's Mr. Robot. And so she follows Mr. Robot to where Mr. Robot meets with Angela. So now Angela is the new best lead.
Hmm.
So I think following up on that one would be smart of her.
Hmm. Okay.
If she is, in fact, not just running, not just bouncing.
Right.
Which doesn't seem very Darlene to me.
But given, like, it's significant that she goes to put the photo back.
Yeah.
Like, to me, this is, and everything is, as everything means nothing to me, implies a person washing their hands of a situation.
Mm-hmm.
Or putting themselves in a position to rid themselves of these.
Or just blanking it and saying, I'm going to do what I got to do, and I know there are bad consequences, but everything means nothing to me.
Okay. Yeah.
Is kind of how I was interpreting it.
Either way, it seems like a grim portent.
Yeah. No, it's not good. She knows she's about to do something that's going to cost her. What that is, we'll find out soon, I guess.
Right.
And that's the end of the episode.
Okay.
Do we have some feedback to do?
We do. First up, Audrey from Toronto. Hey, guys. Oh, so we last week, we on the tot dab scale, we asked if like there's any people with economics or financial experience. Guess what? We caught one. Says, I run a small financial tech startup. So background, financial crisis in 2008 precipitated an injection of just Philip Price. Of just shy of $1 trillion from the Fed. Many conservative economists opposed this move, fearing that such a large infusion of liquidity could cause massive inflation. Almost a decade has passed and inflation has been diffused, proving these economists partially wrong.
Suck it, economists.
One possible reason is that this is the United States bailing itself out, i.e. recirculating its own purchasing power throughout the U.S. economy. In season two, we find out that a CEO of E-Corp leveraged his company's crisis both into $2 trillion interest-free loan from the Chinese Treasury, but also a regulatory concession allowing them to conduct lending in E-coin in the United States. Perhaps $2 trillion being reinjected into U.S. economy from abroad could create an inflation problem. Hyperinflation of the kind that causes produce and dairy, such as apples and milkshakes, to skyrocket in price has led economies to abandon one currency in favor of another in the developing world. It's usually the local currency being ditched in favor of the U.S. dollar in these cases. Hmm. The macroeconomics at play in Mr. Robot universe do seem to be the types of dorm room Marxism, or Ismail saying this is the U.S. getting its comeuppance for the global economic imperialism or something to that effect. Which, not to imply that I don't love it in its own way. In any event, cryptocurrencies driving out fiat currencies is the kind of thing you would need major financial institutions and the U.S. Fed to get behind in order to occur. And that was justified in the plot by the E-Corp CEO meeting with the Fed and Treasury heads in season two. Mm-hmm. So I think what she's saying is that the difference in like the bailout that we're talking about is that the $2 trillion came from an external source.
Right.
But I do feel like if I'm mischaracterizing your comments, Audrey, feel free to follow up and correct me. She does seem like that a lot of this is very simplified and still like it. But like there's a scene of this guy hauling like this junk freighter with a 10 speed down a road while, you know, there's trash not being picked up. And it's just, you know, it's weird. Gas is like through the roof, but a lot of people still driving in New York. Like, where are they going to? Mm-hmm. Like, why are these streets still crowded and busy? It doesn't seem like people are on like any kind of gas ration or, you know, like this has got to be really hitting people in the pocketbooks. And yet the Applebee's equivalents are still jumping and people are still presumably buying $13 milkshakes. I don't get it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like if apples are $25, who the fuck is buying them? You'd be buying like fucking cat food and dog food and, like, you know, you're trying not to starve, not splurging on luxuries.
Yeah. Buying bread.
Yeah. She goes, the most unbelievable thing to happen this whole show is an American CEO being allowed to give a speech at a goddamn G20 event and accuse China of conducting a currency war. In 2017, that just flies right by our top dab radars because a guy who once played a businessman on TV is the U.S.'s president and had said some way crazier shit at a UN a meeting just a month prior.
And guess what? It flew.
It flew. It flew. Yeah. So, I mean, Philip Price was not duly elected by the people. I mean, that's the one big difference. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I never even noticed the fact that, yeah, they just had like, you know, Steve Jobs, you know, like scolding the Chinese at a government, like at a meeting of all the most powerful governments in the world, you know. Noah from Bakersfield, California. I have a theory that Krista is a third personality within Elliot. I almost didn't read this. But one, we didn't have a lot of email this week. And two,
the therapist is another personality within Elliot.
Two, there's actually a decent amount of evidence.
Oh, boy.
The confrontation between Tyrell and Elliot in season two, where Elliot tells him you're only seeing what's in front of you, not what's above you, is a very un-Elliot thing to say. The assumption was Mr. Robot was in control. But in the last episode, season three, episode three, Mr. Robot has no idea what Tyrell was talking about and called him crazy for it. Mm-hmm. Elliot's therapy session with Krista in season three, episode two, felt way off. First, His dependent personality disorder is an extremely rare condition that requires specialized training to treat. It's highly unethical and dangerous for Krista to attempt to hypnotize Elliot. There's no way Krista would open her house to Elliot, who, by the way, is an unstable felon. The room felt very weird, too. The furniture wasn't right, the red books, the way Mr. Robot fired off that Freud quote. I'm betting that entire session and possibly others with Krista were a complete fabrication. Though Krista is based on a real person, I don't believe she continued to see Elliot after the fallout of season one, possibly even after he told her the truth about hacking her. So this, every Krista, so Krista's not a figment of his imagination in the same way that Christian Slater is based on his father. But
right.
The theory here is we're going to increasingly understand that Krista is this, because this has been a theory on Reddit too, the fact, like the evidence here of Mr. Robot not remembering things that it seemed like he said, that there's this mysterious third persona. Could Krista be that third persona?
I suppose that's interesting that Krista would be the part of him that's trying to understand what's going on.
And also, like, I didn't read it because I didn't find this particularly compelling, but now that you said it, also there's, it's kind of significant that he would manifest a more motherly, understanding persona to combat the like relentless, demanding father persona that he has manifested. So that kind of yin yang in that way.
Potentially.
To what end is like Krista going to be the one that fights for Elliot? Or like Elliot's like, you know, like Mr. Robot's the one that fights for his not better angels, and Krista's the one that's going to fight for his better angels.
I feel like there's no predictive power.
That's the problem, but, is there's very little predictive power to this theory, but it's got some decent evidence that like, yeah, we don't, she's not out of practice anymore. Why would she keep seeing this felon that's dangerous? And I don't know enough about therapy to know how much of that, those assertions are right, but it seemed correct to me. Jen H., after watching the first episode of Season 3, I decided to go back and watch the series from the beginning to try to catch stuff I missed. I know it's an exercise in futility, but what the heck? I discovered two things that I want to get your thoughts on. One of the things I loved about the first season was its humor. For example, when Angela's boyfriend tells Elliot he thinks it's awkward between them, and Elliot replies, "I'm okay with it being awkward between us." They moved away from that in season two, which I kind of understood since he spent most of his time in prison or an alternate reality. I kind of hoped that they'd bring it back, but I haven't seen it yet.
Come on, you didn't appreciate the Seinfeld stuff? That was pretty funny.
Him using a mute button on the room.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Soylent references weren't good enough for you about the guy shitting himself.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you. It's not...
I think also
it's not super humorous.
I think also the rapey guy in the cubicle next to him, you're supposed to think it's funny how Elliot's just like totally checked out on that guy.
I can't see funny in that.
Yeah, that's supposed to be the Seinfeld Leon joke of the season. It's not working for me. But I think it's there. It's just, for one thing, this show is taking an ever increasing grim, dour tone.
Yeah.
So, like, just like in Breaking Bad started off as a dark comedy, increasingly became darker and less comedic as it went on because it had to. It's telling a very sad, depressing story, and you can't just be blah-ha-ha. Also, what happened to Elliot's heroin addiction? It was such a defining part of his character in season one. I guess you could kick the habit in prison, but wouldn't it be something that should have come back into the narrative as he came back to the real world to manage his crippling loneliness as he did in season one?
I think he's got prescription drugs for
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Point. Like, I think he's just moved on to a different drug. It's Xanax. Yeah. Is it Xanax or Prozac? Or
I don't know what the actual drug is, but...
Right, but they made a big thing of him. You know, I think you're... Maybe it's on the first two episodes or whatever. But yeah, they get back to his drug addiction for sure.
Yeah, it's just not heroin this time.
It's just, yeah, he's got to do things to get by. And that's our feedback for this week. If you'd like to send more, it's robot@baldmove.com. Not Mr. Robot, robot@baldmove.com. And you can also go down to forums and discuss it there. We have a thread for each episode, each week. You can discuss it with your fellow fans there. Follow along with us on social media by searching for Bald Move, social media of your choice. And, of course, baldmove.com is where everything's at.
Yeah,
you can keep up with the stuff there. We got a lot of stuff that's been coming out, and a lot of stuff that will be coming out. Still, what are we, like a month and a half away from, or 6 weeks away from our kind of traditional midwinter slowdown?
Yeah, more
AKA
than that.
Christmas.
Sure.
Not that, like, because I could think that's like...
It's 100 weeks away, right?
100 weeks?
That's what it feels like,
yeah. Oh, yeah, well. But yeah, we're, you know, if you have, if... Just another reminder, we'll be in Huntsville this weekend, hanging out at the Rocket City NerdCon. You can get the tickets at rocketcitynerdcon.org. If you're in the Southeast, stop by and check us out. We'll be hanging out all day, every day, Saturday and Sunday, doing panels and such. And then we'll see you next week.
Yeah.
Have a great weekend. Until then, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
See ya.